Since debuting Vault 76 last year in honor of America's terse centenary, Vault-Tec continues to expand with plans for well over 100 vaults around the country. And now our exclusive coverage of the continuing volatile situation with Communist China.
Once was a magical place called Vault 76. It protected the best and the brightest of the land from the ravages of the world above. While the surface was burned by nuclear fire and overrun with monsters of radiation and mutation, the people of the vault lived safe and secure, preparing for the day when they would emerge into the new world. Before the plague, before Reclamation Day, and before our residents would become the heroes and villains of a much larger story, it was their time in the vault that helped shape their destiny. As the night draws near, grab a warm glass of milk and a fancy lad snack cake, and sit back as we present Bedtime Stories, Tales from Vault 76. Once upon a time, many years ago, in a place called Vault 76, the best and brightest of the old world were safe from the ravages of nuclear fire and destruction. For those left behind, there was no fairy tale ending. The survivors were forced to learn the lessons of the harsh new world, that the strong would prey on the weak, and life was cheap. In the wasteland, sometimes heroes will rise from the most unlikely of places.
This was post-war America. While the nuclear exchange in 2077 might have been the closing act of the Great War, in truth, society had been fraying at the edges for decades. The tenets of the American dream had become the grist for propaganda, to protect corporate interests and a government which cared little for the common folk. It was no wonder that the survivors turned on one another.
I won't tell you again. Hand over the cram.
No! It's all we have! You've taken everything else, just leave us with this!
Please! It's for our son!
It's a dog-eat-dog world out there, and I don't give a shit about you or yours. Give us the food, or else.
You can't just do this!
We can, and we will.
God damn it, I hate it when they beg. Make sure they're dead and take everything else. See if you can find that kid too. Wouldn't mind having another set of hands around here. Or a snack.
Sure thing, boss.
The refugee camp outside of what used to be Harrisburg, Pennsylvania was in ruins. The families who called the ramshackle huts and tents their home were entirely unprepared for the wave of looters who descended upon them. At first, the refugees sent out a representative to negotiate with the gang, to see if some offering of their meager possessions could get them to leave them all alone. That ended with a bullet in the skull. The gang swept through the camp, taking everything, food, clothing, supplies, and killing anyone who objected or got in their way. It was a common occurrence after the collapse. Celebrating their victory over the defenseless, the looters, soon to become true wasteland raiders, killed the few remaining survivors and disappeared to the west, looking for fresh targets. As darkness fell, there was a movement under a pile of ready blankets, partially hidden by an old wrecked Corvega. A small child, no more than 3 years old, crawled out into the dying light.
Mommy? Daddy?
The child tottered over to the family's tent, nearly stumbling over the broken toys before finding his mother's body, laying next to his father's. No child in the wasteland is immune to the knowledge of death, even at such a young age. But he still reached down and tried to get his mother to move.
Get up, Mommy. Please.
The small child ran over to his father, only to experience the same. Tears leaked from his eyes as he sat down between the two bodies and held their hands, like they had done so many of the times in the past. The wolves were beginning to circle the camp, drawn by the smell of fresh blood. As the night grew darker and the fires began to die, the child could hear their growls grow closer in the deepening gloom. Letting go of his parents' hands, the child wiped his nose and stood up, grabbing a rock from the ground. Above him, atop a pile of dirt, one of the wolves looked down upon its new prey. The pack was hungry, and this would be a tasty treat. The child stood, watching as the wolf padded closer, baring its teeth. The silence of the night was broken by a long howl, followed by a child's scream, then nothing at all. In the morning light, two scavengers entered the former refugee camp.
Damn it! So that's what we heard last night.
Shit, Martin. Just when you think things couldn't get worse. Fucking gangers, worse than the Ferals.
These were nice folks, too. Hell, just last week they invited me over for dinner. Didn't ask for payment or nothing. And heck, they made a great stew.
Shit. Looks like the wolves got in here. Really tore up the bodies. Can't just leave them like this. Grab the shovel. I'm gonna give them a proper burial.
Sure, Charlie. Least we can do.
Well, Charlie and Martin started collecting the bodies of the refugees and digging graves for them. It wasn't the first time they'd had to bury friends, and they knew it wasn't going to be the last. Before the war, they'd been high school history teachers up in Allentown. When they'd first met, they quickly discovered their love for reading and shared progressive ideals. They both believed in the true spirit of America, rejecting the corporate greed and political corruption which had overtaken the country. They had started getting more vocal about their opposition to the war and protesting the strikebreakers and corporate malfeasance, to the point where not only were their positions in jeopardy, but the authorities were investigating them for communist ties. Of course, the Great War put an end to all of that. In the chaos after the bombs, no one cared about two middle-aged history teachers. It hadn't been easy, and both of them had to struggle to survive, but they also helped where they could.
Hey, Martin, you hear that?
Yeah, maybe someone's still alive.
Could be a wolf. Get the rifle.
Crap. All right, give me a minute.
Grabbing their weapons and making sure they were loaded, the two men walked carefully towards the sound. Turning the corner, Martin flinched as a rock barely missed his head.
Go away, Batman!
A flurry of rocks followed, and both Charlie and Martin ducked behind the trash pile for cover.
What the heck?
Hold up, I'm going to take a look.
Charlie peeked over the pile.
Get away from my mommy!
Ducking down to avoid another set of rocks, Charlie swore under his breath and looked over at Martin.
It's just a kid. A young one. And his parents. Pretty sure they didn't make it.
Nah. What are you gonna do?
You know what I'm going to do. The right thing.
Handing the rifle to Martin, Charlie took a deep breath and stood up. The first rocks came quickly, but he ignored the sting and walked up a few steps before putting up his hands.
Son, it's okay. We're not the bad men. We're not here to hurt you.
Bad men!
Charlie let the kid throw more rocks, waiting until he finally got tired. And when the kid ran out of rocks, he fell to his knees, crying. Charlie walked up slowly, then scooped the boy up in his arms and hugged him.
Batman, get away! Let me go!
The child screamed and pushed against Charlie, trying to get away, but Charlie just held him close. Looking down, he saw the boy's parents. He recognized them from one of his visits. They didn't talk much, but he remembered they spent a lot of time with their kid, the same one he now held in his arms. Then Charlie saw the wolf. It was a big one, and dead. It was only a few feet away from where the kid had been standing, its skull crushed with a rock. Martin came out and joined Charlie.
Hey, is the kid okay?
He's far from okay, but he's gotta cry it out. Well, Martin, you said you wanted a kid someday. Guess you get your wish.
The child kicked and screamed for a few more minutes before quieting down. Charlie just held him, walking him over to the other side of the ruined camp so Martin could finish burying the bodies. Finally, Martin came back and the kid looked up from Charlie's shoulder. His eyes were puffy and face streaked with tears.
Good day, young sir. It's okay. My name is Martin, and this here, he's Charlie. We're here to help.
The boy didn't react, besides wiping his hand across his nose.
Now, we've got our own camp not too far from here. We're going to protect you from the bad men, okay? We've got food and maybe even a few toys. It ain't much, but you'll be safe.
Looking first at Martin, then up to Charlie, the boy sniffled again, then slowly nodded.
Okay, then. Let's get a move on. Plenty of daylight left, and we don't want to waste it.
The three of them left the camp and headed east, into a new chapter for all of their lives.
Once upon a time, 27 years after the bombs fell, there were two people, a vault dweller and a California girl. They met and sparks flew. That's when things got interesting. Once Upon a Wasteland is their story. Follow Elizabeth Kirby and Odessa Valdez as they pursue their happily ever after in the post-apocalyptic Appalachian wasteland of Fallout 76. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and many other podcasting platforms. Once Upon a Wasteland, a Fallout 76 love story. Available now.
Hey there, Charlie. You're late. Dinner's getting cold.
Goddamn raiders.
Shit. What did they do this time?
Hit Samantha's farm last night. Killed her husband, made off with her daughter. She's in a bad way.
It's never gotten any better, has it?
If I was younger.
If you were younger? What, Dad?
Day. When did you get back?
A few hours ago. Finished up that caravan contract, just like you asked. Got a good amount of caps, more than enough to tide us over. But seriously, what's going on?
Raiders again. Kidnapped a girl, too.
What the heck are we waiting for? We gotta do something!
There's just too many of them, Day. Nothing we can do.
That doesn't sound like you, Dad. I mean, you taught me. We always help those in need. If not us, then who's gonna do it? What about doing the right thing?
Listen, Day, it ain't that easy.
Why not, Dad? They got guns, so do we. I'm not a kid anymore. I can take care of myself, and I can help take care of others. Weren't you the one saying we needed to make a difference? What would George Washington do?
Martin, Day's right. If we don't stand for something, what's the point? If we're just surviving, we ain't living.
Ah, crap, Charlie. I've seen that look before. Are you sure? We aren't as young as we used to be.
As Day said, it's the right thing to do. Seems the apple hasn't fallen too far from the tree. Martin, get the rifles and ammo. Day, grab the supplies. We need to go see Samantha and then find her daughter.
Thank you.
The raider camp was nestled on the side of a small hill overlooking the rest of the valley. The gang was celebrating after a series of successful raids across the area, and an even bigger party was planned for that night. The guards on watch were half in the bag themselves, itching to get relieved so they could join the fun. Along the tree line, a camouflaged figure lowered their binoculars and crawled to the other waiting pair.
Shit. It's them, all right. More than we expected. I'd say at least 24.
What are we waiting for? We need to go in there and rescue the girls!
Whoa, hold your horses there, Day. How about we have a plan first? I know you kids all think you're gonna live forever, but how about we make sure that we do, in fact, live through the next couple of hours?
But Dad...
Charlie's right. If we're gonna rescue them, we need to be smart about it. Looks like most of them raiders are drunk off their asses, but bullets don't care how drunk you are if they hit you.
All we need to do is get their attention. Bet they'll come running if we make a bit of a racket. Now, since your dad and I won't be able to keep up with you, we'll be the diversion. See that ridge over there?
The one with the waterfall?
Exactly. Looks like it goes right up to the perimeter there, towards the back of the camp. They might have someone watching, but I figure you can get the drop on them if you're careful. You remember the old flashlight signals we used when you were a kid?
Morse code? Sure.
Once you get into position, you signal us. We'll try to take out as many of the guards as we can. Create a real racket out here. That should be enough to keep them busy. You get in there, find the girls, and take them out the same way. We'll meet you back at the camp after, okay?
Sure. Sure, no problem.
Day. Son, be careful.
I will, Dad. You too. Love you.
Day hugged his father, slung his rifle over his shoulder, and started the long climb towards the ridge. The whole way, he could hear the raiders singing and laughing. It made Day's blood boil. If he could go in there and just kill them all, he would. But first, he needed to find the girls. When they'd spoken to Samantha, the three of them had found out which of the gangs had attacked them. But they'd also discovered the same group had attacked several other farms, taking their daughters, while killing the men and boys. It added to an even greater sense of urgency to the trio's mission. And they quickly found the trail, and followed the raiders back to their lair. Today, this was far more than just a rescue mission. It was revenge. He didn't remember much from his early childhood. Of course, he knew Charlie and Martin weren't his real parents. And his name? He might have had another one, way back when. But he had stopped talking for a couple of years after being found. Martin figured it had to do with the trauma he'd suffered. By the time he started talking again, Day hadn't remembered his name. Old Martin, well, he greeted the young boy every single morning with a smile and said, "Good day, young sir." So when the boy started talking again, Day it was. When he was old enough, his adopted fathers told him the whole story of how they found him. It was more than enough to give him a lifelong hatred of raiders. Beyond that, Martin and Charlie had instilled in young Day a sense of honor and courage, teaching him the old values of America, of progress, of helping others, of sacrifice. And finally, of always doing the right thing, even if it was difficult.
These guys are so loud, I don't know why I'm bothering being quiet.
It seemed as though the party had picked up even more. Then Day heard the scream of a young girl. It was enough to get him to move double time until he was in position, overlooking the camp. Sure enough, there was a raider guard leaning against one of the trees, smoking a cigarette. He was looking in the other opposite direction and never saw Day until it was too late. Day's combat knife slid easily through the light leather armor into the raider's lungs, as Day grabbed his mouth, stifling a scream. It was over in a few seconds as the dead raider fell to the ground. Wiping the blade on his tattered field jacket, Day pulled out the covered flashlight and flashed the signals back down the ridge to the tree line. There was a quick response with a series of flashes in return.
3 minutes.
Counting down in his head, Day slowly crept towards the raider compound. He didn't spy anyone else and ended up next to the wooden barricade. There was just enough room for him to squeeze through, and he waited as he counted down to zero. Martin and Charlie didn't disappoint. The loud report of rifle fire was heard even above the loud party. Within a minute, 4 raider guards were dead and 3 more were wounded. The loud cheers and singing were replaced with curses and yells as the raiders grabbed any and every weapon they could lay their hands on and started shooting down the hill towards whoever was shooting at them. Day snuck into the compound, watching for any raiders, weaving in and out of the bunkhouses and storerooms, until he found a set of cages along one wall. He found the kidnapped girls.
Day? Is that you?
Hey, shh!
It was Caroline, Samantha's daughter. She recognized Day immediately.
Quiet! Getting you out of here.
You have to get Jennifer, too!
Jennifer?
Where is she?
They took her. She's down there somewhere.
Caroline pointed to the main area of the raider camp, the same place where the party had been. Jennifer must have been the one screaming from earlier.
Damn. Okay, Caroline, I want you to take my pistol and get the other girls out. There's a hole back that way at the fence line. Once you're through, head across the ridge and find a place to hide. I'll come find you.
Caroline took the pistol and grabbed the other girls, leading them away. Day swore again. The firing was getting louder and even heard some explosions from what sounded like grenades. He didn't have a whole lot of time. Day ran towards what must have been the raider party room. The large space has a series of tables and chairs covered in booze and food, with piles of loot stacked up in one corner. Looking around, Day heard someone sobbing near a large throne-like chair at the head of the main table. Jogging over, he found Jennifer. Her clothes were torn and she was scratched up, but the raiders hadn't done anything worse yet. She was crying and nearly screamed when Day grabbed her by the shoulder.
Shh! I'm here to rescue you.
Jennifer opened her mouth to speak, but then thought better of it. Instead, she just looked at her arm.
Oh no.
The raiders had chained her to the chair and there was no key. At least no key that was easily accessible. Jennifer looked at him with pleading eyes. Day had to think quickly, as the raiders could return at any moment.
Jennifer, this is going to be loud. As soon as you're free, we run. Got it?
What are you going to do?
Day took his rifle and pressed the barrel against the chain. He pulled the trigger and Jennifer was free. But the raiders knew he was here.
Shit! What was that? Someone go check on the girls!
Grabbing Jennifer's arm, Day ran them back towards their escape route. Down below, Charlie could tell that something was wrong. The raiders had stopped firing down the hill and instead were shooting in another direction, followed by a loud siren going off.
Martin! Something's wrong. We need to get in there.
Martin just nodded. Whatever the plan had been, Day was their son, and they would always protect him. Jennifer was glued to Day, gripping his arm as they ducked and dodged through the raider camp towards their exit. It didn't take long for them to be spotted, and Day pushed the girl behind a table as several raiders started blasting away at them with pipe pistols and shotguns.
Stay down!
Day fired several shots in the direction of the raiders, hitting two of them. Charlie and Martin were able to make it up the hill without the raiders seeing them, but both were nearly out of breath. Pausing for just a moment, they oriented themselves.
Just like old times, right?
Yeah, don't remind me.
Charlie laughed and slapped a fresh magazine into his rifle. They both charged forward, getting around the barricades, and fired at any raider they could see, splitting the attention of the rest. Day and Jennifer were trapped. There were just too many raiders, and Day couldn't get a clear shot.
Jennifer, you need to make a break for it!
It's too dangerous. Please, come with me.
Hey, trust me. I'll cover you, and I'll be right behind you.
The raiders were getting their courage up, were prepared to charge. The firing got louder, and Day took a deep breath, holding his rifle close, ready to try to take as many of them out as he could while Jennifer escaped. His dads would know what to do and get the girls home. Just before Day gave the signal, there was a large burst of gunfire and yelling, and bodies hitting the floor. In that moment of silence which followed, Day heard something he never expected.
Day, you okay?
What took you so long, old man?
Old enough, son. I think we got most of them. The rest might just have turned tail. Figure we scared them. Oh, I'm sorry, you must be, let me guess, Jennifer. Yeah, you look like your mother. Well, you're safe now.
Martin walked over and helped Jennifer up, checking her over for any wounds, but didn't find anything more than what Day had, and she was ready to leave. An explosion from the front of the compound caught them all by surprise, and Charlie ran into the room.
Time to go. The raiders got friends. Looks like late guests to the party.
All right, we can all head out the back way. The other girls are already out waiting.
Day took Jennifer's hand and turned to leave. He didn't hear footsteps behind him. When he turned around, Charlie was talking to Martin.
Hey, we gotta go.
Day, we'll cover you. There's too many of them, and if we don't keep them busy, they'll track you down. Now, no questions. Just get out of here and get those girls home.
Day looked at both Charlie and Martin.
I'm not leaving you. Come on, I got you into this. We finish this together, like we always do.
Charlie's right. And damn it, Day, come here. We don't have time for some long goodbye.
Day walked over to Martin, trying to keep a grip on his emotions, and trembling.
It's okay. We did the best we could. Remember what we taught you.
It's up to you now, no matter what happens. Your family loved you, we love you.
Day, we've always been proud of you. There are good people out there who need your help. Give them hope, Day. Show them we can be better.
Dad? Dad? I love you too.
Day fought back his tears and hugged them both before returning to Jennifer. There were more explosions out front and the sounds of the raiders now, yelling for blood. Day took one last look at his father's as they took their positions to cover them before he ducked through the barricade and out into the forest. Once inside the tree line along the ridge, Day could hear gunfire from the compound. Tears streamed down his face as there was a series of explosions and a final burst of automatic weapons fire. Then silence. It wasn't long before Day and Jennifer found the rest of the girls. They all rushed in to hug him, thanking him profusely for rescuing them. Day fought his own tears, burying those emotions deep down before leading the girls back to their original makeshift camp. The raiders must have been licking their wounds, because Day couldn't find any sign that they were being followed. Back at the camp, Day did what he thought his fathers would have done. He fed the girls and made sure everyone was okay for travel. That night, after everyone had fallen asleep, Day went through Martin and Charlie's things. Both of their packs were filled with old mementos and trinkets from the past. In the back of Martin's knapsack was a folded-up picture. When Day opened it, it was of Martin and Charlie, posing in front of what must have been their high school, arms around each other's shoulders. Day refolded it and put it into his pocket. There was also a well-worn little booklet of the U.S. Constitution, along with a textbook on American history. Day collected the personal items and added them to his own pack for safekeeping.
Bye, Dad. I'll do my best.
After a week's travel, Day made sure each girl got home safely. Each family offered payment for his services, but Day politely declined.
No, that's all right. Doing the right thing is its own reward.
The families all expressed their condolences over Martin and Charlie. And when the last girl had been brought home, Day returned to the little cottage that had once been his own home. He built a little memorial there and said a little prayer for the only family he could remember. Day filled the backpack with what he thought he could carry and closed the front door for the last time. Looking to the horizon, Day made a pledge to himself.
All right. It's time to find a cause worth living for.
Turning south, Day took the first steps to discovering his own destiny.
Hi, I'm Fire Rider, and I'm the host of The Pixel People, a podcast dedicated to taking a close look at our favorite characters from our favorite video games. From major characters who define the course of a game's storyline, to smaller characters who you might have never noticed. Every week, we go beyond the quest line to examine a particular character's story arc and choices, and discover the real-world parallels and life lessons hidden just below the surface. I hope you'll join us. You can find The Pixel People on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Day stood on a cliff overlooking a broad valley. Near as he could figure, he was somewhere in the middle of what folks called Appalachia. The name didn't mean anything to him, much like most of the other names on the old maps he found in a ruined Red Rocket service station up north. After leaving Pennsylvania, Day heard rumors of strange occurrences in the region. People spoke about monsters, plagues, raiders, and worse, and everyone warned him away, telling him not to set foot across the mountains. Of course, that just piqued his interest. There was something driving him, wanting him to do more than just rescue settlers or protect caravans, although he still got to do plenty of that. He even turned down a job with the Blue Ridge Caravan Company from Joanne Mayfield herself. No, that wasn't the life he wanted. He figured there was something else out there calling to him, and he was going to find it. Appalachia was not what he expected. As soon as he came down from the hills, he could feel that something was just off. There were no people, none that he could find. Day ran into only what could be described as monsters, things that looked like people, even spoke, but they weren't people. As a seasoned wastelander, he quickly figured out ways to kill them or just avoid them, along with the other creatures which crossed his path. It wasn't until his third week in the region that he found a fresh set of footprints in the dirt. Intrigued, Day had followed them for 2 days, until they ended at the cliff he now found himself on.
Well, where to now, stranger?
Day walked along the cliff face until he heard gunshots from below. Looking down, he could just make out a small building surrounded by, well, a lot of somethings. Day spotted a path curving its way down at the end of the cliff and jogged there to get a better look at what was going on below. As he got closer, a group of, maybe people, something dressed in ragged cloaks were firing into the building. Then he heard someone else shooting from inside.
Okay, you didn't walk all this way just to watch, did you?
Instinctually, Day unslung his rifle and made his way to a better firing position near the building. The others were completely focused on whomever was in the building and never saw him until it was too late. Day figured headshots would probably be best when he stopped firing. All of the others were dead. Ejecting the magazine and sliding in a new one, Day crept slowly forward and finally standing over one of the dead. Whatever it was wearing a mask and looked like an old mining uniform. It also smelled awful. He had been reaching down to take off the mask when he heard something coming from the building. Being extremely careful, lest there be more of those things around, Day made his way to the front door, passing a sign that said this place was once the Mountainside Bed and Breakfast. Day opened the front door and heard movements from upstairs. From one of the rooms, he finally heard his first human voice in weeks.
Overseer's log. Somewhere in the mountains. Oh, not good. Not good. Let's just try not to... trying to focus, but the pain is unreal. It's so bad. I wanted to do this now while I still can. I'm afraid I might pass out. Was attacked by some kind of... I think it was wearing a gas mask. A heavy coat, but not human. Not human. No stim packs left. Funny joke in here about practicing what you preach. This is the Overseer, signing off. Hopefully not for the last time.
Now that's someone who needs help.
Day put away his rifle and went upstairs. There was a trail of blood leading to one of the bedrooms. Pushing open the door, he saw an older woman huddled in the corner of the room in a pool of blood. She looked scared at first when she saw him, but Day rushed to her side, pulling out his med kit.
Shh, it's going to be okay. I've got some medical supplies here, so let me take care of you. Looks like your lucky day. Try not to laugh, but the name's Day.
I'm the Overseer from Vault 76. Oh, pleased to meet you.
Vault 76? Oh, hold still. This might hurt a bit.
Oh!
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Are you one of my residents?
No, ma'am. But I think I'm in the right place. Let's get you fixed up and I'll keep you safe. Then you can tell me all about this vault and how I can help.
Day was able to stop the bleeding and got the Overseer over to the bed. It would be nearly a week before she was well enough to move, but in that time, Day decided that he was, in fact, in the right place, and exactly where he belonged. Several months later, outside of the Whitespring, Day watched as the combined might of this new enclave marched south.
Such a waste.
He had been spying on the Whitespring on behalf of the Overseer for a while, staying just out of sight, building contacts and collecting information. For every gesture of goodwill, like Morgantown, he uncovered darker agendas and manipulation that made him sick. And then he found out about Lilith. It was enough to confirm all of his suspicions. The Overseer was right. There was a cancer growing in Appalachia, and they needed to be stopped.
Day, are they on the move?
Yes, Overseer.
How many?
About 100 or so total. Count at least 2 dozen Brahmin and about 12 suits of power armor. All heading south.
I need to know where she's going. Follow at a safe distance, and don't get caught.
Yes, Overseer. Over and out.
Thank you again, members, for joining us here for a very special miniseries of The Modus Files, Bedtime Stories, Tales from Vault 76. If you've enjoyed this content, please subscribe, and better yet, please leave a review to help others find our little enclave. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Modus Files, for more information about our podcast, Fallout 76 content, and random musings on the enclave. I'd also like to thank our cast, Austin Rogers as Looter Number 1, XO1 King as Looter Number 2, Pandora Beatrix as Day's mother, Cameron Rosati at FWG Plasma as Young Day, Josh Smith as Charlie, Mark Harsworth as Martin, Ryan Negrin as Day, Chris Smith from One Wall Comedy as the Raider Boss, Nikki Sticks as Jennifer, Casual in a Corset as Caroline, Wendy Novosensky as the Overseer, and introducing Brad Williams as Day's father. We'd also like to take the opportunity to thank some of the great community groups which have supported our podcast. The Apocalyptic Aristocracy Discord, home to a great group of fellow creators, the Robots Radio Podcast Community and Robots Radio Rocket Club, the El Gato Pub and Fight Club Community, the folks from Vault 93 and Penal Pineapple, responsible for some of the awesome epic fight sound effects we've utilized in this podcast, the United Wastelanders Network and the Atomic Shop Communities, including Jessica Starr, Cherry Pixel, Scullyface, Nuka Violet, and Fenwa Tarian, the Fallout Roundtable Crew, the Once Upon a Wasteland podcast, the Fallout 5.0 community, and the Wasteland Theater Company. And finally, Jeremiah Johnson, also known as Nobody, our favorite character artist who provided the wonderful character artwork you can find on our website. Stay tuned for a very special Halloween episode as part of the Fallout for Hope charity event for St. Jude's Children's Hospital. Lastly, thank you to all of our subscribers and supporters. God bless the Enclave, and God bless America.